Acts in chapter 8 is where we'll pick up this morning. And we started into that last week. I think we left off with verse 12. And so just, I've got a couple of notes up here. Again, people that's listening to this can't see our notes, but just kind of a recap, and just a really, really brief recap. We've got a lot going on. And I really want us to stop and think about that this morning as we begin to continue here in Revelation. This is not just, some of these are not just a one and done thing, one and forgotten. Some of these things will have lasting effects. I want you to kind of get the picture of the chaos that's in the world during this time that we're talking about. So the chaos, the confusion, the anxiety, the stress, the things that we talk a lot about today, nothing in comparison to what is going to be seen in this day of wrath. So the church is in heaven. First and foremost, the church has already been called out. We're in heaven with the Lord. There we're to be with him wherever he is, then we are from that period of time on. So the church is in heaven. Only the remnant that were the make-believe church, those that might have professed Christ or those but didn't really believe in, put their faith and trust in, those that were lost, those that have not known Christ are left behind. The harlot, referred to as the harlot rather than the church. So the church is in heaven. The Antichrist has been established. We know there's a period of time between the church being called out into heaven and the empowerment, if you will, of the Antichrist. We don't know how long that will be, but there will be a period of time. Now, Satan has always had a man called for this position because just like us today, he doesn't know when the church will be called out, when the church will be raptured into heaven. So he's always had someone prepared, but there'll be a period of time. Antichrist will come on board. He'll sign an agreement with the nations of that day, and that will start the ticking of the clock for the tribulation period. So that's happened. We saw the rider come on board. Pastor and I were talking about that briefly this morning. The rider, the four horses, all four being the same rider, will be the Antichrist. So the day of wrath then is upon us. The Antichrist, that just gave us a picture of the entire tribulation period on those four horses, just working through stages as time progresses on. The day of wrath has started. We saw that with the seals, with the opening of the seven seals. We saw an interlude between the sixth seal and the seventh seal that kind of gave us a little bit of period of time, kind of gave us an update on where we are. The seal started. The 144,000 called from Israel out of the 12 tribes have already been sealed and established. That seal is very important, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on. But those are the remnants of the tribes of Israel. Those are the 144,000. They're going to have some help in their witnessing. We'll get to that a little bit later on. We're going to be two individuals, I believe, will be working with and kind of leading those 144,000 as they go and preach the word of God. But they are sealed. That's important to remember that. Now, that's not the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast we'll see later on. We'll know that, and everybody knows what that number is. Even the most lost person you can think of in the world today knows that number. What is that? 666. People flip out over that if they see it on a receipt or if they see it on a phone number. They have no inclination as to what it really means, but they know it's something to be feared. They want to make a big deal out of it. Means nothing to us today, but it will in that day and time. And that's man's number. That's not God's number. That's man's number. And that's not the sealing that these 144,000 will receive. But they will have a mark of God in their foreheads. We don't really know what that mark is, or I can't find what that mark is, but they will be sealed of God. So at about the middle of the tribulation period, about where we are today, we open the trumpet seals, and we see all of nature affected. Now, we can ignore a lot of things. You can ignore a lot of things in your life. You can ignore some of the most obvious things around you, but nobody can ignore the things that will be happening in nature at that day and time. If we saw, it's a big thing, and we haven't seen it yet this year. I haven't seen it yet. There was thunder and lightning in Clarksburg, at least on Thursday. The temperature was warm, but you've all seen probably thunder during a snowstorm, right? And that's one of those things that you don't see often, but it catches your attention when it happens because it's a little bit out of the norm. This is going to be completely out of what we have seen as far as the normal when these trumpets are revealed to us here. And we've kind of read through some of those already. We saw where the seven angels were called. The first angel sounded, and there was hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast down upon the earth, and a third part of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Now, in my imagination, in my mind, I continue to see those fires that are in those trees from the hail and fire mingled with blood still burning and continuing to burn in some cases as the next trumpet is released. Second trumpet, we saw that there was a great mountain burning as with fire as it was cast into the sea. The third part of the sea became blood. The third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. Third part of ships were destroyed. Again, I see that chaos continuing. The ships still burning. That mountain and that fire still burning. The sea and the dead in that sea continuing to die. A third part of that great death. I continue to see that those things beginning to add up and to build. The third angel, and there was a great star fell from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers. So you say, well, I don't need the waters of the sea. I've got a spring, or I've got a cistern, I've got all these things. And we see here now that life with the natural water, the water that we drink, the water that comes from the fountains here, that supplies our springs and rivers and whatnot, we see a third part of that coming here when wormwood hits. The third part of the waters became wood, wormwood, poisonous, toxic, and they were made bitter, and many men died. We see that continuing on. These things are beginning to build. It's just like in the movie Jaws. How many of you saw the movie way back when, Jaws? Now, the animation was terrible when you look at it today, don't you? But you knew it wasn't safe to go back in the water because the music began to build. You knew something bad was coming. And it was going to get a little bit worse. Every time he broke water, something was going to happen. It's the same thing we see here. The anticipation, the intensity begins to build with each one of these trumpets. And it kind of brings us up to where we are today in verse 12 of chapter 8. But keep in mind, I just want you to concentrate on the chaos. Put a picture with it, if you will. The disruption in the world. Not just overseas. This is going to happen right here where we sit today, right here in Independence, West Virginia. And across the world as we know it. All of the chaos that's going on. The media involved, the news, it's just going to be unimaginable, almost unimaginable. But it will happen, as it's said here, that it will come to pass. And we compare these to the plagues in Egypt back in the Old Testament times. You saw the chaos and the problems that it caused then. But an unimaginable chaos, unimaginable things happening here in this day and time. And in verse 12, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. So a lot of things going on here. The fourth angel gives a sound, and the third part of the sun was smitten. Now we've already seen the sun become as dark as a sackcloth of hair not that long ago. And we talked a little bit about what that looked like. Apparently that was, and I kind of believe that one was somewhat temporary. Did maybe not have continued on. Now we see there the third part of the moon is affected. A third part of the stars. What had already happened to the stars? A bunch of them fell, just like a fig tree that cast her untimely figs. Some of those stars had already failed. So there's already a lack of light that folks were common to or used to here. But again, there's a lot of what we do, our lifestyle, our well-being, if you will, that's dependent on the moon and the stars. And if you remember, there was on the fourth day of creation is when some of these heavenly bodies were appeared, and they were to be used for signs and seasons. And they're used here for the same illustration. They're a sign of the season that is upon the earth at that time. So we're used to that sun. Without the sun, and we see here now that there's a third part of the sun was smitten. Now, I don't know what that really means, whether that means that the Lord divides the sun into three parts and a third of it just doesn't shine, or might make sense that maybe it's just one-third less bright or powerful than what it typically was, what it was created to be. I really don't know which one it is. But stop and think about the long-term effects of the sun being one-third less as strong or potent as what it is today. Think of the temperature. Think of the ground temperature. Think of the light. Maybe it moves farther away. I don't know what it does. But one-third of the sun is smitten or struck is really what that means. One-third of the part of the moon. So again, night becomes more prevalent than what daytime does. immediately after the tribulation here, if you look over Matthew chapter 24, verse 29, look this up and read it to yourself sometime. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. The laws of nature here are radically altered by these disturbances. Only a third part of the light and the day of the end of the day is affected. The intensity of the light has the wattage reduced, if you will, by one third. Think of the night being one third as more prominent than what it is. Now, what happens in the night? It's dark. It's dark. And what do we kind of anticipate, or what do we kind of correlate with the darkness? Evil. Sin. Think of, just look at what your news has told you when there's a power blackout in some of these major cities. What's the first thing you see? Yeah, killing, looting. My goodness, if you, and I don't watch the news, but if you hear about the looting, police have to come out and set up camp around businesses and storefronts, because everybody wants TV, right? Everybody has to break a glass window and go in and steal a TV or steal some kind of an appliance or anything they can steal. The theft, the sin is associated with darkness. So imagine the crime going on. Now the trees are still burning from the fire, from the hail and fire that was cast down. The grass is burned up. All the things have been happening. And now all of a sudden, there's just not as much sunlight and daylight and heat from the sun and light from the moon and the stars as there were. Now, what would you think would happen? What would you do as a Christian? What would you think if some of those things were to happen to us today? I'm not talking that the church is going through the tribulation period, because we're not. I'm saying just use your imagination. If things in nature were to happen like that today, what would you do? You better be falling down on your knees and praying to a holy God and asking him to have mercy on you. The world won't be doing that. Now, that's the purpose of this. God could have ended this tribulation period in any matter of time, but the purpose of the tribulation period is either to harden or to soften the hearts of man. That's the reason for the phases, the increasing intensity as we go on. He's still a patient God. He still wants folks to turn to him and follow and put their faith and trust in him. He still wants them to accept him as salvation and Savior. So he's using nature here that he created to make a change, to shake people up. And I just can't put my finger on how shaken the world will be at that time with all of the things that's going on, all the emotions involved. You know, we're not a very strong people anymore, both physically and mentally. You stop and think of our ancestors that built the nation that we live in today. Whether it was with war, whether it was to establish the nation. Even think about the roads and all the ribbons of roads and highways and things that are out there that were carved by man working by hand. We would perish in a minute if we had to go back to doing that kind of thing. We've got all these machines and all this other technology that we use. We don't know much about labor anymore. We're not the people that our ancestors used to be, that they were. So we're a weaker people, and we suffer from stress. We blame everything on post-traumatic stress disorder, and I know it's a real thing. Well, we blame it on all these other things, ADHD. We blame all these things. We're just a weak people. Why? Because we've gotten so far away from God, we put our faith and trust in the world that we live in rather than the one that has created it. We've allowed our problems to be bigger than the one that has a solution, and we're a weaker people because of it. Now, you don't have to like that. You don't have to agree with it, but that's my opinion of it. And as a teacher, I get to give my opinion once in a while. So you just have to suffer through that. Verse 13, all these things going on. The night is growing. There's a third longer period of time through the day that's in darkness. Verse 13, and I beheld. This is John speaking here. And I beheld. He says, and I looked, and I also heard. I heard something happening, and an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound with an exclamation mark. Now, there's a lot going on here. What's that tell me? Well, it tells us that intensity, again, is about to increase. Things are about to get worse. The music's beginning to churn. It's beginning to get louder. He looks and he hears something. John still has his senses. He's still there. These last three trumpets are separated from the other four, and they're kind of listed, if you will, as woe trumpets. Not woe as in, hey, woe, hold your horses, but as in woe, as in W-O-E, as in a curse. Three different curses here. That's what woe really means here in this situation, woe. Woe to them. You've heard that. You've seen that throughout the Bible before. Woe to those that do this, or woe to them that do that, or woe to the ones that follow this direction. That's a curse. That's a problem that's coming. That's a painstaking curse that's going to come upon the inhabitants of the earth at that period of time. And it's not just one, but there are three different woes. Why? He says, well, the problem is going to be that these other voices, these trumpets, these other three angels which are yet to sound are going to be bad. That's what that really means. It's really going to get serious here. He says, I beheld and heard this angel. And I looked, and every commentator that I read through, everything that I studied, if you take it back to the Greek, this talks about an eagle. He says, and I heard and I saw an eagle flying that resembled an angel. Now, everywhere I looked, if you can find something different than that, then show it to me. I'd like to see it. But everywhere I looked said the same thing. They took it back to the Greek and said that this was actually an eagle that had the appearance of or was somewhat similar to an angel. And it's talking. Now, I've seen some eagles. I've seen them at the house once in a while. Not very often, thank goodness. But I have seen them at the house. I ain't never heard one talk. I've seen them. They're kind of scavengers. They're kind of picking up this and picking up that, but I've never heard one talk. But this one here is talking. It has a special power. It has a special voice for the inhabitants of the earth. Woe, woe, woe. Look out to what is about to happen and what is about to come. And that's where it leaves us in chapter 8. Any question or comments so far on anything that we've covered this morning? Really, we can kind of go through this fairly quickly. Because, again, these are literal things that have happened. If you believe the Bible when you read it, that says that the all of the plagues that came on to Egypt back in the Old Testament days really happened, you should have no problem whatsoever believing these forecasts or prophecies, if you will, that are called to happen upon the earth will come forth to pass just as they're called out. If it happened in the old, it can happen in the new. The same God controlled the ones that happened in Egypt. He's the same one that's revealing to John here himself what's going to happen to those that do not accept Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. It's about to happen. Now, we're coming to a section here that's a little bit tough to understand. It kind of boggles our mind if we'll allow it to. Kind of weird, kind of wild, kind of outlandish, if you will. But these are things that will happen during the tribulation period to a Christ-rejecting world. The harlot. These woes here mark the deepest darkness and most painful intensity of the great tribulation period, generally associated with the last 3.5 years, which is the 70th week of Daniel, which is in the great tribulation period, which is the great tribulation period. These will be the blackest, darkest, most death-defiant days in human history. The worst, you can simply say, the worst is yet to come. If you don't have anything else, you don't feel like you have anything else to be thankful for, number one, you're wrong. But if you woke up this morning and said, I just don't know what to be thankful for, be thankful that you're a Christian if you're a Christian, and you will not face the tribulation period. You will be in heaven with the one that called you to follow him as Lord and Savior. We've got a lot to be thankful for. We don't have to live defeated. We've got hope. We've got a blessed hope in Jesus Christ. We will not go through this tribulation period. But you got to feel for those that will. The darkest days in human history. Terrible days. What we'll see in this section here is the most difficult of interpretation. But this does not preclude the policy of following a literal interpretation here. Even when the figures adopted are the most vivid or wild or outlandish, you say, well, I just don't understand. I just don't see how it can be. You serve or should be serving a God in heaven that can make the impossible possible. The impossible real. And it will reveal to be revealed to this day just as it's prophesied that it will. Very literal here. If there's any symbolism, we'll cover it. But I don't think we're going to find any here for a while. We've covered some of that already. Chapter 9 of Revelation, verse 1. This again, for a setting, this is the early part of the later half of the 42 weeks or the Great Tribulation period. So we're about midpoint, and I still owe you a chart to kind of show you where that's at, but I don't want to get the cart ahead of the horse. Verse 1, and the fifth angel sounded. So we've had four so far. Now we're under the woes. Because keep in mind, we've got woe, woe, woe. Three major curses that are coming to the inhabitants of the earth. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw, this is again, John uses his senses here, I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him, if you're writing your Bibles, underline or circle, him. Unto him was given. Also, Mark, was given the key, Mark, key, of the bottomless pit. So we're talking here about a star. It's the Bible calls it a star, but also refers to him as a being, unto him, a male, unto him was given. So if you look at it back in the Greek here, and I'll read it that, and the fifth angel sounded, kind of an interpretation here from the Greek, the fifth angel sounded or blew the trumpet, and I saw a star of heaven fallen into the earth, and there was given to him a key of the long shaft, pit or well, of the abyss. Kind of what that really means. So he saw a star fall from heaven. We've already seen a couple of stars, and they were literal stars. They were meteors. We saw one that had like a trail of a comet falling here. But this is a different kind. This one is called a being here, and acts with intelligence. Well, you don't see a lot of that in today's society, do you? You don't see a lot of beings using their intelligence. We just kind of go with whatever comes. Lack of intelligence, a lack of common sense in the world today. Just no common sense. I know some very smart people. They're book smart. I don't know if they're Bible smart or not, but I know some pretty smart people that can't hardly pour water out of a boot. There's no common sense whatsoever. There's no use of intelligence. There's no wisdom. And shame on us. This is kind of a side note here. This isn't part of the lesson, but we'll include it. Shame on us if we call ourselves a Christian and we have no wisdom in our lives. That's on us. That's not on God. That's on us. Because God gives us wisdom if we'll ask for it. And we got to be in God's will to be asking and receiving. We have not because we ask not. And that's kind of the case with wisdom here. But there's a lack of wisdom across the country today and sometimes in our churches as well. But this star here acts with intelligence, and he's giving something. He's giving something that he uses. So this is not an inanimate star. This is a being here that we see. And I believe that this star here is Satan. And the reasons for that interpretation here, I think, are kind of plentiful. The prophet Isaiah writes, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer," meaning day star, "son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations?" That's in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12. In Luke chapter 10, verse 18, we find, "And he," Jesus, "speaks unto them, said unto them, said, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from heaven." Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, "And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." John, and we'll find that later on in Revelation chapter 12, verses 7 and 9. John will later say that Satan was put out of heaven and cast to the earth. Satan being cast out of heaven, then what does he do? He goes down here and he apparently takes the key to the abyss, which apparently means that God is permitting or God is allowing him here to do so. Who holds the key today to death and hell? Jesus holds that. Why does Jesus have it? He conquered death and hell at the death, the burial, and the resurrection. So he holds the key to death and hell. But here it's given to Satan. Satan is basically given a vacation within realms here, but to go do what he's never been capable or allowed to do in the past. So he's cast from heaven here as a star. It's given unto him from heaven into the earth, and it's to him is given the key. So it was presented to him. He didn't take it. He didn't earn it, but it's given to him the key. The key here signifies that he has authority over something. He has power now. It's given to him power to go do something, again, that he's not been able to go do in the past. But he likes it. In his mind, it's a step towards where he wants to be. Keep in mind, he wants to do away with God. He wants to become God. And he's willing to do anything possible, anything he possibly can to become God. Now, he knows already, and we know, if we believe and follow the Bible, that he does not win that battle. He's only got the power here that God has allowed him to have. But he's given the key, given to him, again, not earned, not fought, not taken from, but he's given the key, the power or authority over the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit, it plays a big role here, because we're going to see some things come from this bottomless pit that we've never seen in history before. So he's got power here, he's got authority, but it's the permissive will of God. Now, the long shaft of the abyss means the long shaft leading to the abyss. It's the abyss is the bottomless pit, which will be seen over in chapter 20, verse 3 in Revelation. So we'll see that kind of here. The abyss and hell, I want you to get this, and we'll get into the details later on. The abyss and hell are not the same place. Now, don't look at me like I'm crazy, although I may be. The abyss and hell are not the same place. We'll find later on, when this is all said and done, that Satan will then be cast into hell, where he'll spend forever and ever and ever and ever and ever once this is all wrapped up. But these two places, the bottomless pit here and in hell, are two different areas. Two different areas. And we'll get into that here just a little bit later on. Some people believe that there's a shaft opening somewhere, an opening somewhere on the surface of the earth that leads to the heart of the earth. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. If so, and you've got something on that, I'd like to hear it. I'd like to see it. But I can't see that, so I'm not going to be, I can't say that. But somehow or another, there's an area somewhere, whether it's something that's available to man now or something that will be revealed in that day and time, but there's a way forward, there's a key here to this bottomless pit that opens up the door to this bottomless pit, and it'll be open here. We'll see it opened up. Jesus right now holds that key, and we saw that over in Revelation chapter 1, verse 18. Peter tells us that the demons are imprisoned there. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, if you're taking notes, in Luke in chapter 8, verse 30 and 31, and Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him, and they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep, the abyss. The abyss is a very literal place. It's just as literal as heaven is today, as hell is today, just as the place where you live, you hang your hat, if you will. Hell is real. Don't let the world water that down for you, that we'll all go to heaven, or we can be prayed into heaven, or we'll lay up here till somebody asks God to put us in one place or the other. Hell is real. Heaven is real, just as a place where you live today, and when you die, you'll go to one place or the other. Your spirit's bound for either hell or heaven. The choice is up to you. When you put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ, then your home is in heaven. You say, "Well, I'm going to put that off, or I'm not going to make that decision." Then your home is going to be in hell. Plain and simple, literal places. It's important that we understand that and we realize that. We should live our lives like we believe in that. But oftentimes we don't. We don't. If you believe in heaven, you should believe in God. And if you believe in God, you should live a Christian, a Christ-like life. If you really believed in that. Not just when times get tough, but in our everyday activity, we should live like Christ is real. Ask yourself that when you're about to do something that you know you shouldn't do. Am I doing this because I believe Christ is real? If you remember a couple, 3 months back, I asked you what type of a Christian you were based off of a couple of things. And right off the top, I can't remember one. But one is, if everybody in your church did what you were doing, would your church be stronger because of it? That's an excellent question to ask yourself. If everybody in my church behaved, acted, responded, participated just like I do, would my church be stronger or weaker because of it? And I think you'll find the answer for that a lot of times is no, my church would not be stronger because of what I'm about to do or what I'm currently engaged in. Literal here. So here we see in the last half, if you will, of the tribulation period, great tribulation here, the key to the abyss is given to Satan. He's given a freedom that he's never had before. I think this has a little bit to do with why men will not be able to die during this period. We'll get into that a little bit later on. God, I think, too, has a part in that, because these are the people here are a Christ-rejecting people. They have turned their back on the one that he sent to save them from their sins. And they are going to go through pain and suffering. They're either going to harden their heart or they're going to soften their heart. They're going to make a decision. They're going to be accountable. I would today that the world was accountable for their actions. I like to have a plant full of people. We were talking about, somebody asked me this morning where I work. I would just love to have, you don't hear me use that word love very often, I would love to have a plant full of accountable people. I'm sure the preacher would like to have a church full of accountable people. People that you could count on to say, yes, I'm willing to do that. And when they said they were going to go do that, they went and done it just as they said they were going to go do. And if they make a mistake, then they're accountable for their mistakes. We learn from our mistakes, or we should. But be accountable. Be accountable. Don't hide behind somebody else. I think we live in a society today where it's the survival of the least fittest. Whoever we can hide behind so that they look worse and we don't look quite so bad. Shame on us for not being accountable people. And we're off the lesson, but that's okay. Things are starting to happen here in chapter 9. Verse 2. And he, Satan, this angel that we saw that has, that is Satan, he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. Now, we're still in the first woe. We're still in the first woe here. He opened this bottomless pit, and there's a smoke coming out. So there's a smoke. In my mind, it's boiling out. There's a scent. There's a stench, I believe, comes with it. A stale, stagnant scent. There's a fog. There's a choking haze and a smoke that rises out of this bottomless pit. There's a smell. Yesterday, I boiled traps in dye. So I'm going to set some traps. You ever boiled traps? Boil them in logwood dye. That's a process. You got to clean them, get all the grease and oil off of them. There's some smell with that. Then you put them in a dye, and they have to boil in this dye for about an hour, and they take on a really dark, dark effect. Then you have to wax them after that. It's a big process. But as I was boiling those things in a pot in a big turkey fryer, boiling these traps in a logwood dye. It's actually a logwood is a tree that's over in Central America. And you put this powder in there, and the boil's coming off, and the smoke's coming off, and there's a scent coming off. And I got to thinking about the key to the bottomless pit and that bottomless pit being open. But that's kind of what's going to be like on a larger scale. This is something that's been sealed, and all of a sudden now Satan has the key. He can't wait to get in there because he's got power in there. He's got people in there. He's got people, the demons, to go work wherever he wants them to go work. And he opens that up. You ever opened up something that was stagnant and hadn't been opened in a long time and stale, and there's mildew and mold and must? And he cracks that open, and all this smoke comes rising out. It's such a great smoke that the world nature is affected by this smoke. So it's not just central to where this opening is, if you will, an opening, but it covers. It's a haze. It's a fog. It's a choking smoke that comes out. So much to the fact that the sun and the air were darkened because of it. So again, we see nature affected. So we've got fire going on. We've got ships that are in the sea that are still burning. We've got dead fish floating all over the sea, a third part of them. We've got the sun and the moon darkened. Now we've got a smoke and a haze going on. Can you begin to imagine the chaos? Men running to and fro, not knowing where to go and hide. We already saw some of these men were, seven different types of men were hiding in the caves, begging the caves to fall on them, the mountains and the rocks to fall on them and kill them. But death won't come. Can you imagine a world full of that kind of violence, that kind of confusion, that chaos? I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it. You see an earthquake, and you see some of these things. Well, let's just look at 9-1-1, the September 11th. September 11th, whenever that happened. What was it, 2001? People were jumping from buildings. They were running in fear. They were looking for a place to hide, trying to find somewhere where it was safe. Can you imagine that on a worldwide scale? I want you to get that picture. I want you to have that picture in your mind as we continue through this. This smoke coming out of the bottomless pit, like an erupting volcano. And this is a vicious type of smog, if you will. There came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them, so obviously they're following somebody here, it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. We just talked about the seal up here. The 144,000, at least the 144,000, will not be affected by these scorpions that come out, these locusts that come out of this bottomless pit, this smoke. So let's kind of break this down just a little bit. We're 10 after. We've got about 10 minutes here. These are not common locusts. Plain and simple. Not common locusts. Common locusts, what did they do in the Old Testament plagues? What was their main focus? What did they devour? Vegetation. Vegetation pretty much sums it all up. These are not to harm vegetation. They're not to harm any of the two-thirds of the trees that are left. They're not to do anything with the grass. Their focus is on mankind that does not have the seal of God in their foreheads. Foreheads. So they've given a focus here. They're commanded. They come out of this smoke. They're cast upon the earth. And they are given power just as the scorpions of the earth today have power. Now, if you know much about scorpions, and I've never seen I don't think I've ever seen a live one. If I did, it was in a cage somewhere. They're anywhere from 2 to 6 inches long. They're kind of similar to a lobster-looking kind of an animal. And they've got power. They can go wherever pretty much they want to go. They can travel. They can go. They could end up in your bed. They could end up in your shoes. I can tell you a story about something getting in your shoes, and I'll break back to that here in just a minute. They could get in your home. They could get in your closet. They could be in your clothes. They could be wherever they wanted to be. So they're cast out. They're given power. They're given free rein to go wherever it is they choose to go. I don't think I'd want one. And bless you, I don't think I would want one in my clothes or in my shoes. I was going to Ohio hunting one weekend. Quick side note. And I was in a hurry. I was running behind. I was meeting some guys who were already there, and I grabbed my boots that were in the garage, and I pulled them on. I didn't lace them up, which is that's not typical for me. I always lace them up. I just kind of pulled them up, snugged them, jumped in the truck, and I'm going down the road. And have you ever had to, like in your eye, the veins in your foot kind of jump once in a while? I get that once in a while, or the vein in your eye will kind of twitch once in a while. I got this jumping in my foot, and I'm kind of moving around. I'm trying to get that vein to stop jumping. And I couldn't get it to stop, and it would quit for a little bit, and I kind of moved my foot around. It wouldn't come back, and it kind of quit a little bit. And finally, I kind of tightened my foot up and kind of shoved it down there on the floorboard a little bit. And when I did, it just went crazy. I go, okay, there is not something here. And I whipped the truck off the side of the road quick as I could, yanked my boot off, and there was a big old wood spider had gotten down in my boot and was right on top of my foot. And the more I would tighten my foot up, the more he went crazy. Now, I wasn't long. Now, I kind of give me I'm not afraid of spiders, but I didn't like it in my shoe. Driving down the road, it's where I didn't wreck or call somebody else to wreck. Can you imagine those scorpions being everywhere, given authority, given the free rein to go wherever it is they choose to go? You'd have to search for them everywhere. And there's a reason that these men are searching for them, because the scorpions, even of today, have a very painful sting. Now, oftentimes does not lead to death, but a very painful, uncomfortable, long-lasting result of their sting. And it's commanded to them, or they're led here, that they can't hurt the grass. They're not to be vegetation destructive. They're a very literal creature, but they're given certain things, certain parameters that they can and cannot do. They're under the authority of something here. So again, bed, shoes, house, lots of different things here going on with this period of time here. And I saw it somewhere else. So no one person having the seal of God upon their foreheads on the earth is to be hurt or harmed by this judgment plague of the scorpions. This sealed people, again, of the natural Israel only, the 144,000, God will seal them. Satan shall kill and seek to kill. We've talked about this already, but he shall be seeking to kill all other redeemed who do not take his mark on their foreheads. So again, if you were a Christian, if you do happen to accept Christ in that day and time, I think you'll be sought out. You'll be sought by Satan himself and Satan's people, his armies, to be put to death because they don't take the seal of Satan in their foreheads. They don't worship the beast. They don't do the things that require that the Antichrist here is requiring them to do. But there will be some that will be sealed. They will not be touched by these scorpions. Let's go on here. This is the plague of locusts. It's a literal. It's the plague of locusts in Egypt. The difference between the locusts here and the locusts in Joel is the character of the locusts and the object of their destruction. They sting the scorpions, and their objects are evil, Satan-following, Antichrist-following men. Verse 5, And to them it was given, or allowed, or authority was given to them, that they should not kill them. So in other words, the people that they bite could not, would not die, but that they should be tormented 5 months. This is about the last time we see a mark here on time. This is really one of the times we see here when it comes to during the tribulation period, something that's set on time. They should be tormented 5 months, and their torment was the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So there's a lot of suffering, again, to either harden or soften the hearts of men. Imagine the emotions. Imagine the hysteria, the fear, the pain, all the disruption to our mental well-being and our physical well-being as this happens. People be looking for these things everywhere. You'd be afraid to pick up something in your house. I know people that live in Florida, and we've got a plant that's in Florida, and I talk to some of those folks in here all the time. They'll pick up something in their kitchen, a big old cockroach will run up underneath of it. And I'm not talking about West Virginia cockroaches. I'm talking about cockroaches as Henry Hensley, some of you might remember Henry Hensley, he was a preacher, was here. He was stationed down in Florida, and he said he had literally had a cockroach wake him up in the middle of the night and it was eating a cookie in his kitchen. It was that loud. These are cockroaches now. These are not little things, but running everywhere. Can you imagine having to search for these scorpions everywhere you walked? The fear, the disruption to our day-to-day being here. But they would not kill men. They were to be tormented for 5 months. Now, a couple of different things here with the 5 months. Does that mean the plague itself, we'll call it a plague, does that mean it lasts for 5 months or the bite lasts for 5 months? Really don't know which one it is, but I think it's a literal, when you're bit, you will be poisoned by that thing, you'll be affected by that thing for 5 months. 5 months from the time you're bitten. It really doesn't matter. But it says here that they will be tormented. Men will seek death, but will not find it. And we'll see that here in the very next verse, in verse 6. And in those days men shall seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. So they'll be seeking death. Why? As a release from their pain, as a release from their mental problems. They will yearn, shall desire, they'll yearn, they'll seek death, they'll want for death, they'll pray for death. Just as the men were begging the rocks to fall on them, they'll want a way out. Sad thing of it is, it's a lot like our world today. Would you agree with me? You might not agree with the thing I've told you so far this morning. Would you agree with me today that our world is seeking a better way? People have pains, they have problems, they have emotional insecurities, and everybody's seeking some sort of help. And the answer is right in front of them, in the Word of God, but they won't soften their hearts, they won't put their pride away to accept what Jesus Christ has done for them. They're looking for a way. They want a way. They want a way out. They want a better life. But they don't have enough sense or faith to accept something that's a free gift to them. They're looking for a way in the world. They're looking for the world to change. They're looking for an improvement in the world to help them and to give them a way out. When God's Word has the way out right here in front of them. Better yet, let's take it a step farther. As a Christian, you've been given the opportunity to help those in the world that are looking for a better way because you've got the answer. Amen? You've got the answer. What are you doing with the answer? What have you done with the answer this week? Have you at least lived a life that showed that you had something different than the world had to offer? Has what you've done this past week been enough to strengthen your church and the work of God. If not, we failed. If not, we failed. But this world's looking for something different. They're seeking death. They want a way out. These are the ones here that are without the seal of God. They want a way out. They can't stand it any longer. Satan wants them here because there's going to be a battle between light and darkness that's going to be waged here. God here wants these men, because of their rebellion, to understand the fact that there is consequences coming because of that rebellion, and there's no escape from it. There's no easy way out. There's no easy way out other than accepting Jesus Christ. There'll be those who will attempt suicide in that day and time that will be unable to do it. That's what that says. They'll seek death. They're looking for a relief, and they'll go to any length to try to find it, to try to have that rebellion, to put things to an end. I can't face another day. Well, they're going to have to. Have you ever come to that point in your life where you say, I just can't face another day? Well, there's someone in heaven that says, you don't have to face another day alone. I'll take you through it. And when you put your faith and trust in Him, the world may throw some terrible things at you. It's not going to be a bed of roses. There's still going to be sickness. There's going to be pain. There's going to be suffering. There's going to be loss. But we have a blessed hope through Jesus Christ that says, when it's all said and done, He's already given us the victory. If you're not thankful for anything else, you better be thankful for that. And if you're down, you're defeated, you don't have to be, because as a Christian, you've already been given that promise of heaven. Any question or comment on where we are so far in the lesson? We'll continue on with these locusts, these scorpions, if you will, because it gets kind of strange here. They're going to take on some shape, and John gives us some specific details about what these things look like and act like. I wouldn't want to see one. I wouldn't want one of them things in my boot. Who was that? What cartoon was that? Said, oh, that was, I was a snake in my boot. What was that? Yeah, it was on Toy Story. What was the character? Woody, yeah. He said, there's a snake in my boot. I don't want one of them things in my boot. And I'm thankful for the fact that I won't live through the tribulation period, and if you're a Christian, you won't face it either. We won't face it. Let's close with a word of prayer.